This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is iFanboy Special Edition Thor Ragnarok. Welcome to the Special Edition iFanboy Show on Thor Ragnarok. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Beep, boop, boop, beep, boop, boop.
And our special guest, hi, Mike Romo.
Hey, guys.
And we're here to talk about Thor Ragnarok, the latest Marvel Cinematic Universe film. There'll be spoilers if you haven't seen it. Pause the show and come back as we talk about it. This is the third Thor film. This is the some number Marvel Cinematic Universe film. I think it's like 26 or some crazy number like that.
Really, I've never thought about adding it up, but just now I thought
that's funny.
Obscene number.
And this is the one that serves up the next one, which is Avengers Infinity War.
That's When's that?
God.
May, I think.
Really?
Yeah, it's spring. Wow. Yeah, it's the kickoff film for next year. So this film stars Chris Hemsworth as Thor, Tom Hiddleston as Loki, your normal Thor cast, but it adds in Jeff Goldblum as the Grandmaster, Carl Urban as Scourge, and of course Cate Blanchett as Hela, as well as some other guest stars we'll get to in a minute. This film, it's interesting. Yeah. It's
you know what I feel like this is? Feel like this is a giant sized Thor, like when you get those big thick annual comics.
Yeah.
And it's like with special guest stars, Doctor Strange and the Incredible Hulk. I can even see the cover of it.
Right.
So this it's like Thor annual. This wonderful one-off thing.
It's tough for me because I really enjoyed the experience of watching it and I laughed a lot.
Yes.
And the director was Taika Waititi. I saw the Hunt for the Wilder People. I really loved it a lot. He brought a really interesting Kiwi sensibility to the film. But it's a film I like less and less the more I think about it.
Wow. Kind of like a little scab somewhere.
It's important to understand that the Thor series of these films is my second favorite after Captain America. And I realize that nobody else likes them.
No one. No, he's right.
We did the top five list, Josh, at our last hangout. And the first Thor was in my top five. I love The Dark World. I recently just rewatched both of them. This is a pretty big departure. And it's fine. I don't mind that. It's just that I liked the other Thor films, so I would have been fine with the regular Thor film as the third Thor film. So it's
I feel like there are there are different lanes for the Marvel movies. There's kind of like the Captain America films, which, you know, like, I think we all agree that Winter Soldier is like the best one. It's a little bit more serious. It's a little bit more topical. Then there's the Guardians of the Galaxy comedy thing. And then there's the ones like Ant-Man, which are really fun movies to watch. And then you watch them, and then you're stoked that you did, and you had a great night at the theater. And then
you never think about it.
And then that was good.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
And then when somebody mentions Ant-Man, you're like, yeah, you should totally go see it. I don't own it, but you should totally go see it.
I don't know that I agree with you.
Really?
I mean, I like this film. Yeah, I did too. Each one has its own flavor, but this one doesn't even fall in the Guardians of the Galaxy wacky. This was like. This was that like amped up more.
See,
like
Ant-Man. This was a Guardians of the Galaxy-ization of Thor, but it was more successful in my eyes because I thought it was funnier than Guardians of the Galaxy.
It was, but also, I mean, like it had problems. So it was super entertaining and it was fun, but it had problems that were fine in this context. But now I'm like, oh, please don't make more like this.
For sure.
It was basically structurally, I thought it was a big, not a mess, but like it wasn't a tight story. It felt. The reason why I say it's a Guardians of the Galaxy-ization of Thor is because it felt more like a series of gags than it was a story, well, which is what my problems with Guardians of the Galaxy films are.
There were three acts, you know, like it did its thing and it was fine. To me, when I say the wacky part, so basically, like the gags were funny. It was the, I'm trying to think of, it was like making Will Ferrell's Anchorman character the voice of everybody. You know, at first I thought they were going to make Thor kind of silly, and I kind of like that because it's irreverent. And then I was like, oh, Banner's going to talk like that too.
Yeah.
And then everybody's going to do that.
The thing is, the Thor films have always been funny.
Yeah.
And Thor's always been the comic relief of the Avengers films, kind of.
Yeah, you know. And I don't mind that. My only fear, my criticism would be that I don't want to see more of it really too much. I don't want to see a whole other movie like this. Like, this worked perfectly as it was. If you're going to do a different thing that's different, do a different thing. Ant-Man is that to me. Ant-Man was like, we're going to do a different thing with this. And that worked really well. I have seen Ant-Man since then. I really liked it. I also don't own it, but I don't buy these just in general. Yeah, like I enjoyed it, but I was like, a less enjoyable version of this would hate it. Like if it was just a little bit less funny.
Well, let's talk about the movie. Let's talk about the story. Because I had not seen the first two films in a very, very long time. I'd completely forgotten how he ended up in the spaceship. When I saw the trailer, I thought we were talking about Planet Hulk for a bit.
Well, we were.
Is that the real Planet Hulk?
They took the very basic structure of Planet Hulk, and they did that as the second act. So the two things that happened were at the end of Thor: The Dark World, Loki faked his death and he went back to Asgard and he assumed a throne pretending to be Odin. We didn't know how he got rid of Odin. And then at the end of Avengers Age of Ultron, which I didn't really remember, the Hulk took off. They put the Hulk in the ship and sent him away. I don't remember why.
He took off.
Well, I thought
like
they threw him out.
He had wrecked something and then he took the ship and like went off on his own, and then Black Widow was trying to get him back, and he shut off the communicator and flew away. He didn't trust himself around anybody, so that was the thing.
Okay, oh. I didn't remember that very much. So we find Thor. So it opens with Asgard, where Thor fights Surtur, and that comes back to haunt us later on. Voiced by your buddy Clancy, I'm like.
Yeah,
Surtur. So Thor fights Surtur. Loki is running Asgard as Odin. Cameo by Matt Damon and Sam Neill as the actors portraying them in the
and another helmet.
That got a lot of laughs in the theater that I was. I had a good audience that was cheering and clapping, and people were really laughing hard at that little theater scene. I thought that was kind of funny.
So Thor comes back, realizes very, very, very quickly that Odin is not Odin, and he's actually Loki, and he is. They go back to talk to Odin, who is now in Norway, sort of wandering the land.
Green screen Norway.
Like Kane.
Yeah, really, really rough green screen Norway. And then he reveals that their older sister Hela is now coming back, and Ragnarok is about to happen, and they go back to confront her. But in the course of that, both Thor and Loki get sent off through a broken rainbow bridge, and they both end up on, I guess, what's the planet called? Scar?
They get knocked off of the rainbow bridge, right. And then,
Sakaar, something like that.
That's where they run into the Collector, who holds the Contest of Champions, and that the champion currently is Hulk, who was also ended up there, because this is a planet in which the things that are lost in the universe end up. So then the whole second act is Thor fighting in the Contest of Champions against the Hulk, and then they break out along with my favorite character, Korg, voiced by Taika Waititi, the rock gladiator.
And Murray.
And then, funny. And then they end up going back to Asgard with their little group, including Valkyrie, played by Tessa Thompson from Creed, who was terrific, and form a little group to go back and fight Hela back at Asgard.
So yeah. I have some notes here that I have remembered to speak about, and they largely concern. I think the reason that this worked is that what you really had was a stellar cast. Several of those people are unable to do anything but be themselves, Goldblum. But it was okay.
I loved him in this.
Yeah, I know. And you totally. I feel like everything else had to be wacky for that to work. You'd be like, what the hell is this? I mean, right away, we're going to talk about a movie where I get a scene that, I guess, listen to me. You get Chris Hemsworth, Idris Elba, and Mark Ruffalo.
Right.
And, I mean, that's too much handsome for the screen to take. it's absurd. You've got that. Cate Blanchett was amazing. Yeah. I mean, she's the only one who played it 100% straight to the vest, like, villain. She had a couple of jokes, I think, about it. But either way, you know, right up, I was like, she looks awesome. Yeah, like, yeah. She just really was. I was like, she's too good to be doing this movie, but thank goodness she is. She's great. Carl Urban is, I don't know, like, he's an underutilized human in the acting world.
For sure.
He just can't seem to get that lead role that he should have. So it seemed kind of like, well, he's, you know, he was really good in that role, but it was sort of a silly role. There was another thing.
His turn at the end was great, though.
I know. I've fallen in love with Tessa Thompson in everything I've ever seen her in.
Yeah.
And she's never the same in any of them. I mean, like, the first time, I think the first thing I saw her was Dear White People. And then she showed up in Westworld. And and she's just always completely different, which is hard to. Yeah. And then in Creed also, she's great. She's really great.
The only criticism I had is that her accent came and went.
Yeah. So did Thor's.
That's okay. I think Cate Blanchett's character worked really well because it was Taika Waititi directing it, because I think he sort of embraced the absurdity. I don't think she would have had that crazy helmet in the first two films. You know, they don't like putting the characters in those crazy Norse helmets, but I think the helmet did a lot of the work for that character because it looked so strange and intimidating.
That brings up the final point that I have in why this worked, and this is maybe very specific to me, or at least people of our specific subgenre. There was Kirby all over
it. Yeah.
There was the patterns, the drawings, the robots, the face masks on the robot, the Hela's, you know, completely unadulterated Kirby costuming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you look at the background, some of the helmets that people were wearing. It was one guy was just wearing a triangular hat that had a bunch of holes in it. I was like, this is incredible.
Yeah, exactly. So I had some dipshits behind me, and it gets over. I just go, where are those drawings? What was the influence of that? And the girl with him goes, oh, the 80s. And I was just like, oh, my God.
Look, they have very short memory.
I wasn't going to stand up like, it's all Jack Kirby.
They're not wrong with the 80s influence, though. I think that's something we're seeing a lot more coming out of Hollywood now. It's a lot of filmmakers who came of age in the 80s. This is the synth soundtrack was very 80s, which I actually really love. I really love the soundtrack.
And that's fine. Like, visually, though, so much of a game for Kirby. And to be honest, if you had to think of a soundtrack to go with those Kirby drawings, that's what it would sound like.
Right.
It just happened that it came from that time. And I think that there was a self-awareness when using that stuff that made it work, too, if that makes sense. Wasn't just random.
Well, Mike, you liked it. What were your overall thoughts on the movie?
Oh, you know, I saw the one trailer, and I liked how they used the music. I was talking to our friend Chris Albrecht, and he thought that they did blow most of the music budget on that Zeppelin track because that came and went throughout the thing. But I was actually, it was weird. I have such an ambivalent relationship with the Doctor Strange movie, but I was really stoked to see him. It kind of made me want to see a movie about the new Avengers for some reason. I just remember. Right. I just love that book. You know, I love the Hulk, you know, and watching him having kind of his sort of bachelor pad, and like, it was just so silly, the middle part.
I like the trading on the fact that there have been different Hulks. So yeah. I didn't have to say, hey, this Hulk is different than the movie one, because I know, you can change the Hulk around and he's interesting. It's just like Batman.
Yeah. And actually really just sort of skipping ahead when he was going back to becoming Banner, I really loved that treatment of it, how you really saw the two sides fighting each other. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just shrinking and growing. It was actually slamming between one persona and the next. And I thought that was really sort of surprisingly emotional in a way. But it was an interesting, it was a nice, it reminded me of this sort of pause in the first Avengers film where there was all this stuff and then they kind of hung out for a bit. Right. And then all this stuff happened again. And I kind of like taking a breather. I thought the dialogue and the script was a ton of fun. There was even a line that Hemsworth said that was like, he said something about something being the worst, which is exactly what he said when they were talking about his son's name in Star Trek. It was like, oh, that would be the worst. And it made me really, I just love this character so much. And it made me want to go home and watch Rush again, for those of you who haven't seen it.
That is not streaming anywhere, and I look for it all the time.
I bought it. It's so worth buying. If you haven't seen it, ladies and gentlemen, it's basically Thor in Formula One racing in the 60s and 70s, and it's more than just that, but it's a great film.
Well, it was the answer to, like, well, maybe Ron Howard hasn't done anything great in a while. What about Rush?
Oh, right.
But no one watched it, but
it was really interesting when Idris Elba came up. People cheered.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I didn't really realize that people cared enough about these movies to cheer when a character came on. And it made me realize that there are a lot of fans for these films. And I really liked it. I was completely ambivalent going in because there had been so much time between the two films. And I wasn't a fan of Age of Ultron. But I just loved Thor so much. I was never bored. I thought the editing was really good. I thought the shots were nice. The only thing that really distracted me truly was sort of the green screen silliness when Odin was talking to his sons, even though I liked the scenes pretty much. And it was fun to see Thor sort of mature and become, you know, whatever growth we're going to see in his character.
Well, he's basically,
it is just such
Odin
a strange
now.
Film. Yeah. It just where it fits is so strange. I mean, is that Darkseid's ship? I don't, at the very end,
you mean Thanos?
Thanos? I don't know. Oh yeah. Obviously not Darkseid. Wait, who are the people on the building? There's, you know, the big heads.
Did
you guys see that? In the big apartment building, and they had the big heads on the outside.
The Hulk was the top one.
Oh, you mean who were the Mount Rushmore and Scott?
Yeah.
I just thought there were other champions.
Oh, I thought there might have been some little.
There might have been comic references, but I didn't. They were on so quickly that I didn't really absorb who they were. Yeah, I just assumed they were the champion heads. Yeah, I mean, it's tough because I did really have fun, and it's a really funny, genuinely funny movie, and I love that sensibility and that sense of humor. You know, Taika Waititi came up with the Flight of the Conchords guys. He did a bunch of those episodes, and I thought his character was really funny.
It's weird that it came out in November, right, or October. I think, a perfect summer film. I mean, maybe obviously scheduling, whatever. But, like, for me, it's the kind of film that, if when I get out of it, I expect it to still be daytime because I just saw it at a matinee and had a blast.
I think they didn't know. I think it's like same thing with Deadpool. Like, they just didn't know.
And the reason I think why they went so left field with this one is because the Thor films haven't been relatively popular. I mean, it's crazy to say that, but movies that make $700 million, but they're not making $1 billion.
They didn't have a stylistic impact. And they didn't really have a style.
And so they could do this with the third film because, you know, it's different than doing this, say, like Captain America. And B, they could, you know, it's in November because they don't know if people are going to go see it again. Because it's, like Josh said, it's not, you know, it's not Spider-Man, it's not Captain America. I think this is probably going to be a surprise for most people. I think it's a surprise how well-received it is considering the risk they took with it.
Well, they're timing it right because there's, like, we were talking about Connor the other day. What movies are there to see?
There's nothing to see right now, yeah. And it's super fun. It's
the last
fun
movie
time.
I saw was Blade Runner, and I was like, oh, thank God for this Thor movie.
Yeah, that was the last movie I saw, yeah.
I'm not sure it's not still running. I know I left it one.
We're not going to get derailed in a Blade Runner debate.
Yeah, don't get started.
But it was also tough, like, you know, they did away with a lot of the sort of Thor tenets. You know, the Warriors 3 are dispatched rather offhandedly.
Yeah.
I feel like they spent less time on screen than they did in the costume trailer.
Hogan had a moment.
Hogan got more because Hogan was hardly in the second one because the actor couldn't do it very much, so he got to have his more of a stand. But like the first two guys, Volstagg and not Green Arrow, they died under 10 seconds.
That's sad.
I was fine with it.
And it's someone who loves those characters in that world for the first two films. That was a little tough. I really liked the scenes with Odin. You know, Anthony Hopkins can't help but have gravitas.
Yeah.
And losing him is tough. You know, the comic book arc currently happening is Thor becoming Odin, so that's what they're doing here. You know, he loses his eye. He's now the king of Asgard.
I think that works. I think, speaking of Odin, I really like the change that, like, we see his past.
Yes.
Like, she cracks away the ceiling. Cool. You see he was a conqueror, and then he decided not to be. And so, like, it's his fault. It always goes back. And there's a real ambiguity to the morality of that character, and there always has been.
Yes.
And then they did the same thing with Loki a lot, which I really like, because you keep, like, everyone's probably like, I kind of like him. He looks awesome in that suit. Oh, yeah, he was the bad guy in the other movie. Oh, it's funny that he's scared of the Hulk. Is he going to be a bad guy? Oh, he's being a bad guy. No, he's kind of being a good guy. You never know. And that is what is so great about that character, but it is so hard to do well.
I'm glad you brought that up, because it was one of those things like, are they friends? Are they enemies? And then I realized, oh, brothers. this is the perfect relationship. This is exactly how two gods would be, Loki and Thor, where you want to see them together, but they're doomed to always be at odds. And then they're arguing about how they're never going to see, they're talking about how they're never going to see each other again. And then they do that, the trick where it was, please help me. And he throws Loki at the people. That stuff was really funny and very touching at the same time.
It's a brother relationship. Like, they love and hate each other.
Yeah.
And it's not always that Thor is the good guy.
Yeah.
Like, you've always got this moment of doubt to it, which is really strong storytelling.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know where I fall with this one.
You're really struggling here.
I'm struggling with it. I liked it. It's just...
You sound like me, where I was just like, I think it bugs me in a bunch of ways, but I don't care because I had fun. Basically, that's where I was. And I was looking forward to it. I actually had seen the trailer, and I'm so bored of superhero movies at this point.
For sure.
That I was like, well, this one looks nutty. And I didn't know that it was Taika Waititi, which was a risk. It's a big risk. But it paid off because I really liked that sensibility. I mean, basically, you had little bits of Flight of the Conchord in there.
Yeah.
You know.
I did like that he got to use two of his three leads from Hunt for the Wilder People. Sam Neill was at the cameo, and then Rachel House played Topaz, Grandmaster's right-hand woman.
She was also the lead in
Wilder People. I liked that he got to use there was a lot of New Zealand actors in it, which was nice.
Yep. I love the female characters in this, just in terms of both... On the good, you know, obviously Blanchette was amazing, but the girl from Westworld, whose name? But Blanchette she just owned it so hard. Yep. And it's like, 100%. to make a helmet like that, and that transition when she actually forms it and then gets her powers, she had that easy sort of silkiness to it that was just, you couldn't take your eyes off her. She was incredible. And if she hadn't been so committed to it, it would have all fallen apart. She had to be the heavy there.
Well, I mean, you know, it was basically evil Galadriel, so it wasn't super hard. I'd seen that. If I had a Tessa Thompson's arc wasn't all that good or interesting. It was like she had to go through it, everything, but the story wasn't really about her, so she didn't really have time for that thing. I mean, again, like there wasn't enough room for them to be, you know, do everything they do, I think. But
yeah, that's why I think I had problems structurally. I think a lot of things just sort of happened.
There was a ton of stuff.
Sure.
But that falls within the comic book story idiom, though. Like it doesn't not ring. When I then compare it to the stories that this stuff's based on, I was like, yeah, that's about right.
It just feels like a big comic book. There isn't this sort of editorial continuity between all the scenes. It's like a lot of stuff slammed together, but as a whole, it's one of those comics that you keep around for a while throughout the summer. It's just this big, big, juicy, double-sized issue.
I think Benedict Cumberbatch, Doctor Strange, is terrible.
You hate him?
If you think back to how utterly forgettable and boring that movie was.
Oh, man, that was really
terrible. When he showed up and he doesn't sound like I want him to. Like, the mechanisms of, like, how he did his magic and his place and that whole scene... His attitude, everything was good, but like I just saw Benedict Cumberbatch in a weird costume.
I wish they just let him use his accent.
Totally.
I think it's distracting that he's doing an American accent.
His accent, it's very Midwestern. It doesn't sound right.
And it's very flat, so it's harder to emote. And he just looks so British. And so...
Either one.
I just think it would have been more interesting for the characters to let him have the accent. But I like him. I like him as Doctor Strange. The movie was boring, but I like that sequence. I thought it was fun.
I thought the sequence was fun.
Whenever Thor is not able to stand stoutly with his hands on his hips, it's always funnier. You know, he's completely off balance, literally in that sense. It's always
When he was in a Hulk's bedroom and he tried to put his hand on the shelving, but there was no real great place to put his hand, and then he just sort of folded his hands. Like,
I'm telling you, that stuff shouldn't have kept working.
I know,
it
right?
Should have been like, all right, enough. I get it.
He's so handsome and charismatic that it's so funny when he's completely bewildered.
And the girls loved the gratuitous topless scene. That was hilarious. People were dying of laughter and clapping and hooting at the same time. It was just him walking around looking for a shirt.
If I look like that, I would never be able to find my shirt.
I just don't have shirts that do that.
I was looking for an extra shirt at that point. All right, I just need to cover this up more.
So,
Can we just say the whole hair thing? I mean, that was the only thing that seemed really like kind of...
That felt like a concession to the actor who doesn't want to wear the wig anymore.
Sure. Yeah.
He looks great in both.
Yeah, well, he's super handsome, but I think he doesn't look like Thor when he's got the short hair. I don't like it in the comics either.
Yeah.
I don't mind him for a little while as a part of it. Like, he's got a... Yeah.
I did like that he had... The haircut was really bad. Like, there was, like...
Yeah.
There were deep cuts in. Like, it wasn't like...
It all stretched in, like, incisions where you can see the skin. Just really bad at that job.
It's interesting to me that Hemsworth hasn't become... more of a leading actor in stuff. Like, there's definitely things that have tried, but nothing that really went anywhere. Rush is like the best example of, oh wow, he's awesome in this. But yeah, like a lot of other strange choices, that Black Hat movie, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
he should be a huge star.
He also did in the other
the whale movie.
Yeah, the whale movie, the other Ron Howard movie. It was a good movie, In the Heart of the Sea.
No, it was not. And that was the worst accent I've ever heard an actor put on in my entire life in a film.
Wow. Huh.
It was him trying to do a New England accent, but in the 1700s.
Oh, jeez. What'd you guys think of Ruffalo?
I didn't love this take on Hulk. I had a problem.
I didn't mind the Hulk part. I thought...
I don't like Chatty Hulk. In the comics, I never liked Chatty Hulk, so I didn't...
I guess I don't mind is the thing they do, but I thought that then if you're going to then go to Banner, I think it may have been better if Banner was a little more grounded.
Yeah.
Because I think it would have worked nicely in contrast. Everything else, he seemed like he was too harried, and that doesn't seem like his thing.
Yeah, Manic Banner, especially the arc he's been through in the other movies, is he's gone to his zen place
where
he's able to control everything, and now he's back to being manic. I get also waking up on a foreign planet might make you more manic, but I thought he didn't seem to be the same Banner we saw in the previous films.
Him and the Hulk, you know, the Hulk and Banner are some of my favorite parts of the Avengers movies, and I was really looking forward to him in this, and it was one of the things that it wasn't bad. It felt a little flat, though. I felt like I wanted more out of it. I didn't mind the Hulk parts in this. That did not bother me that he was chatty, that he was whatever. The Hulk got to get more in his own. He got to get really mad for a while, but he wasn't really, you know. The Hulk changes, and that's always fun. You know, Mr. Fix-It or whatever.
It totally works within the context of the character. I never liked chatty Hulk, so it's not my favorite Hulk. So when he was, you know. It was funny, you know, petulant child Hulk was funny, but it was like also not my favorite kind of Hulk. I like Hulk Smash, but it was, you know, I like the celebrity Gladiator Hulk.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was a little sad because, you know, I don't want to go back to Earth. Earth hates Hulk. I'm going to stay here.
Yeah.
And I couldn't decide if I wanted more of the Planet Hulk story or, you know.
Yeah.
It was the Ragnarok story and the Planet Hulk story in the same movie. And it's like, which one did I want more of? And I couldn't figure out which one I wanted. Because every time they'd leave one, I'd go, "Aw,
right."
That's the way it's supposed to feel. That's the right thing. I call that the...
leave them wanting more.
Well, who's the Star Wars author that I can't think of right this second?
Zahn.
That's the Zahn effect. When you were reading the Zahn books originally, every time they left one of the places, the people that they were with, you'd be like, "Oh." And then you'd get really... That's the book that I always think of with that effect. You're like, I was really enjoying that story. Oh, this is interesting, too. We're over to Mara Jade. Oh, we're to Thrawn. Like, but every time you stop the one, you go to the other. You know what's interesting is that people are going to talk about how funny this is and whatever. I thought the fighting in the comic book action sequences were really, really strong. I thought that sort of comic book fight action stuff was kind of huge. I really like stuff where your scale is way off. So when you have Thor fighting something that's really gigantic, or when Hulk jumps at the huge Surtur and starts to hit him.
That was funny.
You don't that a lot. Yeah. We got it in comic books for years, but it's never really been a thing they've been able to do really well with CGI. And this was a thing where it did it really well. I like the idea of a giant thing versus a small thing, but the small thing is also strong. It makes a great dynamic visual. And there's a lot of that, which is what Asgard should be. Asgard, if anything, should be more magical and magisterial and everything, and so that we approach that a lot more in this one.
A lot more scale stuff. I love the there's an old Japanese animation film, Macross, Do You Remember Love, and there's a whole projection concert sequence, and when Jeff Goldblum's character comes up with that huge hologram, it really reminded me of that. And I actually liked the fighting because the scenes were well balanced. They didn't go on DC length. and they were just enough. They got the stakes were high. You felt the crunch, and then the fights were over. And so they helped propel it, but they didn't seem like dead weight, mm-hmm. which is apparently quite the trick.
Well, also, like, you would have Thor go up against Thor did it and Hela did it. I think it happened a few times where they went up against a lot of different people at once.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was actually directed in such a way that it made sense. Like, you saw him go through all of the different people instead of, you know, normally it looks like a dude waiting in line. Like, if you think of, like, the Marvel hallway fights or something like that, it just felt like a guy who was much stronger and more powerful, you know, going against all these people, even though it was a bit challenging. Had a sequence to it. Had a sequence of events. I like that.
So the movie ends and Odin's dead. Thor's missing an eye. He's got an eye patch. Surtur has destroyed Asgard, and all the Asgardians who didn't die are in a spaceship with Thor and Hulk. Who else was on there? Was Loki on there?
Yeah.
Loki must have been on there. Loki and then...
Scourge.
Korg. Scourge died. He went back to fight.
Oh, that's right. He did. You're right. I forgot.
And then, so then they're flying off to find new. I thought they were going to all go to Earth, you know, as per the comic storyline, and restart Asgard in Norway or whatever.
Oh, right. Or in Kansas.
In the post-credit sequence, or the mid-credit sequence, they are flying off and they encounter a giant ship, which I don't know what that means.
I didn't know. Right. I think it was from Star Trek. I think it was Eric Bana's ship from there.
I assume that's the
That would have been real meta, though. That would be fantastic.
There was a lot of that. Him sitting on that chair.
Yeah, for sure.
I was like, that's That's Kirk.
I like that a lot.
I assume that's Thanos' ship, but we'll see.
Thanos, what I thought.
Thanos, not Darkseid.
And then the final. I would have been happy with way more Jeff Goldblum. So the final sequence, I enjoyed quite a bit. In which
it's a tie.
The Grandmaster comes out of his ship in the middle of the revolution on his planet, and like the best con artist, manages to turn it around and say, "I was a big part of the revolution. You couldn't have." Yeah. Revolution without somebody to revolt against. So I'd like to thank, we all did a great job. Pat in the back.
I kept loving those girls, and that they were often in the background with sort of the Dr. Seuss haircuts, where they had their hair was like a little fro, and they had a little straight up line, and then a sphere of hair. Again, and more Kirby hairstyles. I want all of that for Halloween next year. It was so cool. That little society, everywhere you looked during those scenes, there was something in the background that was just so pleasing, not unlike those pages. It would be really fun to go through and just sort of look at that, those costumes and that makeup, because there was some really great work in that in those sequences.
That's Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah,
do Ragnarok. We bring you around it all, Connor.
Well, I mean, I enjoyed the experience of it, and there are things about it I really liked, so I do appreciate those things. I'll probably watch it one more time to see how I feel, but I can't imagine watching it as often as I do the other Thor films.
So. Do you watch them often? What is it like? Hey, it's Thursday. Sit down.
Yeah, Thursday. Did it
a couple times a year.
Huh.
All right.
Yeah. Like when when you're cooking.
Thought about.
Like a Thursday night. I mean, like a Saturday night. Let's watch Thor.
No, Thursday night.
Yeah.
Gotta use it again.
We'll see. We'll see how I feel. I
keep going for it.
I would have liked.
It's always tough the next day.
I would have been happy with a full, straight up Ragnarok war in Asgard, but that's not what they did. That's fine. So ratings for Thor,
rating.
Ragnarok, rating. Out of 5, ratings.
Out of 5? Oh, good. Okay.
I'm going to give it a 3.5.
Oh, jeez, God.
That's a pretty good score for someone who
is it?
Sure if he liked it.
The 0.5 is for Goldblum.
Wow. Okay.
I'm going to give it a solid 4. Absolutely.
As am I. I'm going with a 4 also. I could go higher, but I think that that's going to take a little time.
Yeah, I agree.
A little perspective. I think that you're going to see... And you're already starting to. You're starting to see rapid, like some people loved it. You've got to go, this is the best thing ever this week. And then a bunch of people are like, I hated it. I don't know how it will wear over time.
My only concern is that what you said earlier, Josh, is that if this is a huge success, which is looking like it is, suddenly all the movies aren't like this.
Yeah, but what can you do? Well, I guess Guardians of the Galaxy already has that kind of...
It's already like Guardians of the Galaxy is already like this, but I'm worried that the success of those films means, you know, Wacky Cap or...
I liked Guardians of the Galaxy, both of them, a lot more than you did, Doug.
Yeah, I didn't like them at all.
I didn't even see this.
I thought it was fun.
But
do you think this is
the last Thor film?
Probably.
Yeah, me too.
I don't even know. I don't even know what comes next.
They're going to do the big Avengers. This is supposedly the big wrap up to all everything is this Thanos storyline. And we didn't even mention the fact that the Infinity Gauntlet made a cameo appearance in the film.
It was a fake one, apparently.
Didn't.
And that was the a cosmic cube? Is that
that was. I think Loki grabbed it.
No, that was the Tesseract.
Well, it's just the same thing.
God damn it. They look exactly the same.
The cosmic cube is the Tesseract. They just don't call it the cosmic cube in the movies because it's too silly.
Yeah.
My feeling is Loki probably grabbed that. That'll come into play later.
Yeah, he did.
We don't know for sure, but my feeling is that these Infinity War movies are going to wrap up this particular 10-year arc of these movies, and then we'll see what they do going forward after that. I don't think we're going to get, like, Captain America 5 or 4 or whatever. But we don't know. I mean, I imagine at some point they're going to start recasting these movies and starting over with something, because Iron Man's 50. We'll what? See. Tony Stark.
It's saying Robert Downey Jr.
Robert Downey Jr. is old.
You said Captain America.
I said Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man.
I don't know what you said. That's I was just making things in my head.
So we'll see what happens. I don't know how much longer we go with these. We'll see what happens sure. after the event, two-part Avengers movies happen.
What do we got next? We got the Ant-Man and Wasp. We got the
Black Panther,
which seems completely outside of everything and looks pretty badass.
It does.
There'll be more Spider-Man movies.
Will there be?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Kidding me?
It's done monster business.
The kid's
overseas.
Like 14. Yeah. They're going to flog him until he's dead.
I think, is he like actually 20?
Probably. Might as well be 14 as far as I'm concerned.
For sure.
So we'll see what the future holds. For us, the future holds in 2 weeks, Justice League.
Oh my God. It's finally coming.
The movie that no one is excited about. And then we'll end the year with Star Wars, The Last Jedi. And so we'll be talking about those two films coming up and special edition shows. As always, you can listen to our weekly podcast, the Pick of the Week podcast, which talk about the week's comics and our various other shows like our Talksplodes and Booksplodes. And until Justice League, I'm Connor.
I'm Mike.
I don't know how to do it with you, Mike.
I don't either.
I've done this enough.
I got uncomfortable with the pause.
Yep.
Great. I got two of you now.